All right, we are. Look, we are on Mem Aleph and Beis, the very, very, very bottom. The Mishnah said the Rabbi Yosi had a very interesting chiddush. Rabbi Yosi said that Yontif Arishin Shechal Aliyas V'Shabbos, when the first day of Sukkot is also Shabbos, so there is a mitzvah to pick up and to shake the Arba Minim, and this fellow forgot that it was Shabbos. V'Hoytzias Alulav Rishus Arabim, and he carried his lulav from Rosh Yachid to Rosh Hashanah. The Mishnah told us, Pater, according to Rabbi Yosi, he is exempt from a chatas, mipnei shaytziya b'rishus, because he removed it, he carried it with permission. Wasn't with permission? Zok Rashi, b'rishus mitzvah, with the permission of mitzvah. What does that mean? Shahayat tarud b'mitzvah. He was distracted. Tarud usually means like troubled or bothered. But it doesn't mean troubled or bothered. It just means totally overwhelmed and distracted. He was totally distracted by the mitzvah. And Rashi says three things. U'mechashev, ve'asuk, u'mimaher la'asosa. He is thinking about it. He is physically involved in it. And he, with azrizus, is anxiously anticipating doing it. Because of that, he made a mistake and he forgot it was Shabbos. Because of Riyasi, tabit bar mitzvah, shagah u'tar kares, patim mikarban. Riyasi holds that if he made a mistake due to mitzvah, and he therefore was negligent in something which is kares, he is exempt from a korban. In other words, the practical application here is that when he was so distracted by the mitzvah of lulav, and therefore he carried it on Shabbos, so he's exempt from the korban for violating Shabbos. Like I mentioned last time when we read the Mishnah, that off the cuff, it would seem that the idea behind this is that when a person, why should a person ever be chayav of a korban for violating something b'shogeg? B'shogeg means it was an accident, no? So why does he have to bring a korban? Okay, he's not going to get skila, he's not going to get kares. We're okay with that because it was an accident. But why should he have any consequences whatsoever? It's a korban chatas, right? It's a sin offering. What's the sin? It was an accident. So the answer has to be, because it wasn't a total accident, it was a failure of his mindfulness. It was a failure to be aware that it's Shabbos, right? So if a person fails in his consciousness, in his mindfulness of Shabbos, he is failing in his observance of Shabbos, right? So what changes if he's doing a mitzvah, if he's distracted by a mitzvah?
Stuff he's distracted by, the stuff he's distracted by wanting to do good. It's not like
his mindfulness in the service of a Kaddish Baruch Hu caused a distraction in his mindfulness of his Shabbos. It's a mindfulness that's the problem here, not a distraction. It's not that he's right, Albert, that's what you're trying to say, right? It's not a negative, it's a positive. It's because he's totally overwhelmed by the mitzvah and so excited for the mitzvah. He's serving Hashem. So that's what's causing him to get distracted from Shabbos. Okay, so then he's exempt because that's not considered a violation of the mindfulness of Shabbos, because it was at the expense, it was the result of a mindfulness towards mitzvah, towards service of a Kaddish Baruch Hu. So because of that, it mitigates his lack of mindfulness towards his creator vis-a-vis the halachas of Shabbos. That's what I would say off the cuff. So Amar Abaye, right, said, the only exemption from korban is when he was not yet yotze his mitzvah. Right? Notice he's so distracted by doing mitzvah that he's caught up and therefore he forgot it was Shabbos. But if he was already yotze the mitzvah of lulav, and now it's a question of just carrying his lulav from one place to another, so chayav, so then he's chayav because he wasn't distracted by the mitzvah he has to do, he's just carrying a lulav at that point. So the Gemara says, wait a minute, how is that ever going to happen? Because isn't it true? Ha mida agbahaya nafak be. As soon as he hagbah, right, is hagbah, he lift up a sefer Torah. As soon as you pick it up, nafak be. Nafak. What's nafak again? What's the shorish of nafak? Poke.
Go out.
Right, to go out, to be yotze. Nafak bay, as soon as he picked it up, nafak bay, he is yotze with it. As soon as he picked it up, he's yotze, right? The Gemara is telling us that you don't really have to shake it. As soon as you pick up your Arba Minim, you're technically Yotzei at that point, right? Netilas, Lulav, you just have to pick it up. So wait a minute. How is it ever possible? Akbaye just said, the only time you'll be exempt from Achatas is when you were not yet Yotzei, and therefore your distraction is due to the mitzvah. But if you're already Yotzei, so then it doesn't apply. You're going to be Chayav Achatas. Wait a minute, it says the Gemara. You're always Yotzei as soon as you pick it up. So he picked it up inside his house. He walks into Rosh Hashanah. He was already Yotzei when he picked it up in his house. There is no case of him picking up a lulav where he wasn't Yotzei. He's always Yotzei as soon as he picks it up. So Abaye, what are you talking about? You're obviously wrong. Amar Abaye, kishahafcho. When he flipped it upside down. This is where we get it from. We saw the Tosfos a few dabam ago, where Tosfos says that, same basic question, how can you ever make a bracha before Netilas Lulav? You make the bracha after you picked it up. You're going to make the bracha before you pick it up? That's not right. You have to hold the Cheftas HaMitzvah in your hand. But once you pick it up, you're Yotzei. So one of Tosfos' suggestions was flip one of them upside down. So that's the case here when he was not holding it in the way that it grows. He was holding it upside down. In which case, he was not yet Yotzei. You can even say he didn't flip it upside down. Here, what are we dealing with that he's not yet Yotzei? Where he took it out in something else. So he picked it up, but he picked it up in something else. Really, says the Gemara. But Rava himself is the one that said, L'kicha yedei davar ha'reshma l'kicha. That when you take something, al yedei davar acher, vis-a-vis something else. If there's a handle attached to your lulav, you pick it up by the handle, so shema l'kicha. That is considered taking it. So it's not true that if it's in a case, it's in a box, it's in something else, you're not Yotzei. You are Yotzei when you take it by taking something else that's connected to it. The Gemara says, yeah, but honey, mile, these words, that's true, derech kavod. When it's a handle or something that's kavod to the lulav, avod derech bizayon lo, but not if it's something that's not appropriate for it. The whole concept of this is considered taking it is when it's like a nicer way of taking it. It's some nice way to do it. But when it happens to be that it's sitting on your garbage can and you pick up your garbage can and the lulav is on the garbage can, that's not called derech kavod to the mitzvah. That's just through something else, in which case you're not Yotzei. Amar Rav Huna. Okay, so what happens according to this? So according to Abaye, that the case where Rabbi Yossi says you're exempt from a korban when you carry your lulav on Shabbos is only when you weren't Yotzei. How can you have a Yotzei? You're Yotzei as soon as you pick it up. Says Abaye, because he must have been holding one of them upside down. Says Rava, he was holding it through something else. What do you mean through something else? It has to be a specific type where it's not a derech kavod something else, but it's a derech bizayon something else. It just happens to be on something else. It's not a mechubad way to carry the lulav. So what about a lulav case? Lulav case would be considered derech kavod, right? You wouldn't carry around a derech bizayon. So that would mean that if you carry your lulav in your lulav case and your esrog in your esrog case, you're already Yotzei? Because Rava says you carry it through something else, you're Yotzei, as long as it's derech kavod. Well, your lulav case is derech kavod, your esrog box is derech kavod, right?
That means that just walking to shul would be enough to do the mitzvah, and then shul wouldn't
have
to do
it again. Is that really your problem? I don't know. Okay, ask your local posik. Interesting problem. I don't know. It's just an interesting problem. Okay. Amar Ravuna. Omer, hi, Rabbi Yossi. Rabbi Yossi used to say, hey, this is him, Rabbi Yossi, that we're talking about our Mishnah. Oy lasa oif. Oh, how do you like that? Oy lasa oif. When did we talk about an oy lasa oif? Just this morning. I'm telling you, the Torah is alive. That's the way it works. I gave a shiur this past Monday night. Happened to be on the halachas of Hava'ara on Shabbos, lighting a fire, Bishul on Shabbos. We discussed a whole bunch of things. And what happened? The power went out in part of Pomona. And so people who never had their gas things going on Shabbos had to have their gas things going because that's the only thing that worked. The electricity was off for Shabbos. We had a generator in the shul for Shabbos. We had no power. So one of the women that was at the shir called me up and said, okay, perfect timing. You just gave the shir on this. I want to make sure I'm doing it right. How do I do the thing with the blech? And this and the other thing I always use. She always uses her plata. I don't know, whatever it is. She never uses it with the gas with the blech. You see? That's the way Tara is. Tara is always speaking. Yeah, but she hadn't done it. She's about tshuva, whatever. So she wanted to make sure she's doing it right. But because she had gone to the shir, you know, that week, that's the wake up. Anyway, if you find your bird that's supposed to be an oila, so it's supposed to be completely burnt up, and you find it mixed up with these birds called agafayim. What are agafayim? So there's a long rashi here, but we'll keep it short. Eina el lashon oifos oilas oifshanim says bein oifos hamelukim lechatos. So it refers to those birds that had malika done to them, and they're going to be brought as a sin offering.
And what
malika? Malika's when the kohen severs the back of the neck of the bird with his nail. It has like the opposite halachas of shechita in a lot of ways. So the kasavur, so get mixed up. Because kasavur chatas oif he. So he thought that this bird, which got mixed up, it was really an oila. What are you supposed to do with a bird that's an oila? Burn it completely on the mizbeach. It got mixed up with birds that are chatas. What do you do with the chatas? Go on and eat it. So he, v'achla, he eats it, thinking that it was a chatas. So he really is going to, should have been chayov, from me'ila, it's forbidden benefit from Beis HaMikdash, yeah? Not allowed to benefit from something based on big personal benefit. Here he ate it. You're not allowed to eat it. So he violates Me'ila. So the Gemara says, no. According to Rabbi Yossi, he is potter. Because he thought that it was a chatas. My kamash malan, what are you coming to teach us? Ditah b'divar mitzvah potter. That a person who made a mistake about a mitzvah is exempt from the consequences. From the korban. Hainu hach. That's exactly the same thing that we learned in the Mishnah. So why does Rabbi Yossi need to teach me the same principle, giving a different example? Teach me the principle, the principle is the principle. Hainu hach. Mahu the same, I might have thought, hasamu de tobid var mitzvah butter. When I would have thought, there is when we say he made a mistake in a mitzvah, he's exempt. Hainu, specifically the avad mitzvah, where he ended up doing a mitzvah. There's a case of lulav, is that he carried it. In the process of carrying it, or after he carries it, he's doing a mitzvah. Avalacha, but in the case of the eating of the bird, that's really an oila. But here, dita b'divar mitzvah v'loy avad mitzvah, when he made a mistake about something that was a mitzvah, but he did not do a mitzvah with what he did, there was no mitzvah to eat a korban oila. It's an avera. Hey, Maloy. So there, maybe we would have said that his toes, Bidvar Mitzvah, does not exempt him from his korban. Kamash Malan comes to teach us that it does. So even though he's not, and he doesn't end up doing a mitzvah in what he did, still because his mistake had to do with his excitement and distraction to eat the proper korban chatas bird, that exempts him, even though he did not eat a korban chatas bird, he ended up eating an oila. Okay. Meisivei, attack question. Rabbi Yossi Oimer, sounds like a contradiction. Rabbi Yossi says, a sheikhed es atamid, she'ina mavukar kehilchasoi b'shabbos. If a person shechts the tamid, the constant offering every single day was an oila, she'ina mavukar. This is a good shoresh. What's the shoresh of mavukar?
Bakar.
Animal? Animal's a noun. Right, it's interesting. It comes from the word boker. Bikur cholim. So, what does it mean?
To find sick?
Yeah, what does it mean? So, why do we call it boker? Boker means the morning. Why is it called the morning? Because everything's very clear. You can check everything out. The light comes up. What was dark a few minutes ago is now clear. Levakir chola actually comes from the same terminology as bikur, as we're learning in this Gemara. Bikur mevukar kehil chaso. Bikur mum. Literally, bikur means to check out. You have a korban? You have a responsibility to make sure it doesn't have a blemish. You're not allowed to bring a korban if you haven't checked it for blemishes. It could be that you missed it, and now that you shechted it, and now that it aged, it's time passed, you're not going to find it anymore. All kinds of problems. So you're not allowed to bring a korban that you didn't check for a mum. So bikur mum means to check it out for a mum. What does bikur cholim mean? Yeah. So what is it really? What's the mitzvah?
To make sure that they're good.
That's right. To make sure he has everything he needs. That's literally what it means. It's not like to just nose pass by and say, oh, hamakom yinacham eschem for being sick. You know, and like, you're supposed to go, what do you need? You know, can I get you something? That's bikur chum. Anyways, but it's the same shorash. She'enu mevukar. So, hashochel es tamah she'enu mevukar. If a person shechs a korban tamah that was not checked out for mumim, kehil chaso, appropriately, to halacha, b'shabbos, on Shabbos, chayev chatas. He's chayev chatas. Okay, v'tzorech tamid acher. And you have to bring another korban tamid. Is that the same thing we've been saying, or different? What do you mean? He's involved in a mitzvah. He's tamid to our mitzvah, right? He's trying to bring the korban tamid. He's totally distracted by the korban tamid. How could he be chayev for violating Shabbos? Because remember, if it's not a kosher korban, he's pasha just violating Shabbos. Shchita is a malacha. Not just a class. Why you? So, he's violating Shabbos. How can it be? He's tamid to our mitzvah. He's trying to bring the korban. Why didn't he check it out properly for mumim? Because he's so excited and distracted by the mitzvah. And this is the same Rabbi Yossi. I thought tamid bar mitzvah, you're pater from korban. Now you're telling me tamid bar mitzvah is chayiv. What's the difference? Amar lei bar mina dehahi. This is an interesting phrase. Bar mina hahi, that doesn't count. Bar mina, with the exception of hahi, of that case. Why? Why is that an exception? Why is it different? The ha'itmar Allah, because it was said on that case of the korban tamid that wasn't checked. Amar Rav Shmuel bar chitoy, I don't know, an unusual personality. Rav Shmuel bar chitoy. Amar Rav Hamnuna, Saba, said Rav Hamnuna the elder. Amar Rav Yitzchak bar Ashion. Amar Rav Huna. Amar Rav. Quite a masura. So this all goes back, all the way back to Rav. Kigoyin, this case of the korban tamid, kigoyin she'eviu me'lishcha she'einan mevukarin. That the case was not that he just didn't check it. The case was that he brought it from the chamber in the Beis HaMikdash that had the animals that none of them had been checked. So this is, that's a bad example. This is a case where it's total negligence. He shouldn't have taken an animal from there altogether. So if he took an animal from the wrong place altogether, then...
What is this room of animals? Yeah, like cages in the Beis HaMikdash?
They had certain chambers in Lishcha where they had the animals. What can I tell you? There are all kinds of Lishcha, so all kinds of things over there. Okay, but that's the Gemara's answer, is that in a Hanami, if we were talking about a case where everything was appropriate, there was just a mistake, a tabid bar mitzvah, Rabbi Yossi would exempt them. The case over here is a totally different case because it was a tremendous negligence. He took it from the wrong place. Mishnah. A woman may take the lulav, or the arba minim, from her son, from her husband, and she can even return it to water on Shabbos. Nowadays, I don't know anybody that puts their lulav or anything else back into water after they use it. A lot of times we put things in the refrigerator, not the lulav, but hadas and rabbas. But apparently back then they used to put their arba minim in water. They would keep it in water to keep it fresh. And you could give it, she can handle it, which is the first chiddush of the Mishnah. What's wrong with that? Why would you think she couldn't handle it? She can handle it, and she can even put it back into water. Right? Could have just said that the husband comes back from shul, and he's allowed to put it into water. Why does it have to add that a woman can take it from her husband and her son? What's the chiddush in that? Well, it doesn't say she shakes it even, right? She's just putting it away.
But didn't you say before that just carrying it can be considered a mitzvah?
Okay, perhaps. Rabbi Huda Omer says, B'Shabbos machzirin. On Shabbos, like we just said, you can return it to its original water that it was in before on Shabbos. But Yom Tov Ma'isifin, and Yom Tov, you can even add water. Uva Mo'ed and Anchala Mo'ed machlifin. You can even switch the water and fill it up anew. New part of the Mishnah. Katan hayadei alin naneya. A katan who knows how to shake the lulav. Chayav lulav. He is obligated, obviously, in chinuch, for lulav. So Rashi on the Mishnah, first Rashi on the Mishnah, says Mekabel is isha miyad bina miyad baila. She can receive from her husband and her son as lulavayan, their lulavs. Velo amrinan, and we don't say kametaltila midi deloichazi. She's carrying something that's inappropriate. What do you think that means? She's carrying something that's inappropriate.
Start by carrying the lulav and
then start wearing tefillin. Muktzah! Maybe it should be muktzah for her. She doesn't have a mitzvah of lulav. Maybe it should be considered muktzah. So apparently, it's not considered to be muktzah. That's the issue. Says the Gemara, pshita. Obviously. What do you mean? Why in the world would you think that it should be muktzah? But the husband and the son just used it. I mean, it's not muktzah, it's a mitzvah. Maybe she'd be muksa for her because she doesn't have a mitzvah. So how would we categorize a lulav in Hilchos Shabbos? What is it? Why am I saying that? So let's say you have a stick outside on Shabbos. Are sticks outside on Shabbos muksa?
No. Yes.
100%. They're nothing. You can't pick up a stick, kick a rock. You can't do anything like that.
You can, but it's a car driving place on Shabbos.
No. If you want to throw rocks at cars on Shabbos, you have to be making them before Shabbos.
Okay.
Yeah. No, they're very machbid on this. They're machbid on Beinan on the makom. Not so much Beinan on Mechavero. So, yeah. See, sticks and stones, they are total muksa. They are not mucha in any way, shape, or form. If you go ahead and you take a rack and you want to make it into a doorstop, you got to do that ahead of time, before Shabbos starts. You have to designate it. Okay. What about food? Anything that's edible, by definition, is prepared for Shabbos, because there's always a chance you're going to eat it. Okay. What about a hammer?
So
a hammer is right in between. Why? Because on the one hand, it's not sticks and stones, like the type of thing you'll never ever use for Shabbos. It's not even in your purview because it's like outside in the yard. It's a hammer, but on the one hand, you use it for things that are prohibited on Shabbos. But you could use it for things like cracking walnuts. You could use it on Shabbos. So that's in between. Food, totally not muksa. Sticks and stones outside, totally muksa. Nothing you can do about it. Hammer is what's called a kli shemalachtoi le'isser. It's a kli, it's a vessel, which means it's usable for all kinds of things, but its primary use is prohibited on Shabbos. So it's muksa to use it for things prohibited, but it's not muksa if you're going to use it for something that's permissible. So anything which is defined as a kli, you're allowed to use it for itself. And you're even allowed to move it if you need the actual place that it's occupying. That's a little tricky. You actually have to need it. It doesn't mean, oh, I don't like it there, let me move it. That doesn't count. It means you need the spot. You know what I mean? You need the spot it's in. So then you'd be allowed to move it to utilize the area. So that's called gufo and makomo. You're allowed to use, to move a kli, shemalach teleser, for its own personal, for its use, to use it for something in mutter, or for its makom if you actually need the space that it's occupying. What's a lula? Does it fit into one of those three? Well, it ain't food. It's not something sticks and stones because it is a branch of sticks and stones, but you're allowed to use it on Shabbos because it's a mitzvah for Shabbos. So perhaps we define it as a klisha. So Gemara starts off by saying, pshita. Why pshita? Is it pshita or not pshita? Gemara says pshita. The Gemara says, mal disema. I might have thought, since a woman is not obligated in lulav, maybe we would argue that it's considered muktzah for her. Why? But she could do the mitzvah, can't she? I mean, it's not usher for her to do the mitzvah. She's just not obligated. So what's going on over here? What do you say? So, Kamash Malan, that's not true. That is not considered muksa for her, despite the fact that she's not obligated in it. So, according to this Gemara, what's the reason why it's not a problem for her? What does the Gemara say? What does the Gemara not say? The Gemara could have said, well, it's not muksa for her because she could do the mitzvah if she wants. That's not the answer to the Gemara. Gemara answers, Kamash Malan, what? So let's take a look at Rashi. It's the line right under the Gemara. Kamash Malan, Kevan, Deroi Linatilas Anoshim, since it is appropriate for the carrying of men, Teres Kli Alav. It's like a hammer, it's a Kli, it's like a plate, it's like a fork, it's a Kli. Umutter Betiltul Lakol, and therefore it's mutter to be carried by anybody. It becomes a kli shemalachta leheter. It becomes a kli that its use is permissible on Shabbos. So wait a minute. Why didn't the Gemara just answer because it's mutter for her because she could always do it? So I'm not 100% sure. I have a hunch that maybe the easiest answer to that question is because the Gemara wants to give us a rule. And the rule is going to be more far-reaching than just lulav. Because if there's something that's going to be mutter for one person, and maybe even usher for someone else, which is not the case here, but maybe there would be something which is mutter for one person and usher for everybody else. Let's say truma. Is truma muksa for Yisrael?
Yeah.
Well, it's mutter for a Kohen. He can eat it.
But
Yisrael has no use for it. So maybe she's muksa. So what's the rule that we derive from here? Not because she's chayav in the mitzvah, but because her husband and her son are? Because since it's mutter for them, apparently it's mutter for everybody. So it could be the Gemara did this just to give us a more far-reaching rule than we would have derived had it just been lulav, but believe it, I have an open question. Why doesn't the Gemara just say, well, she could always do the mitzvah herself, so what's the problem? Okay, so then the Gemara goes on and says, katana de'alenanea, a katana knows how to shake, rattle and roll, but here it means shake the lulav. So then he is chayav in the arba minim. Tani rabbanon, we learned in a brisa katan yadelenanea chayav lulav. This is a list of basically ages or maturity where a child is chayav and chinuch and different things. What you see first and foremost from this brisa is that there's no such thing as an age of chinuch. What do I mean? There's no such thing. A kid turns 6. And he's chayiv all the mitzvahs. Everything's different. It depends on what the mitzvah is. If you notice how to shake properly, which not all children do, because I've seen children shake it at each other and at the floor and whatever, you know what the kid's doing. You know, mind green because I'm Luke. You know what I mean? Anyway, so chayiv lulav, once they can shake it properly, lehis atev chayiv b'tzitzis. So lehis atev means to wrap. It's a funny thing, right? We make the bracha on a talis gadol, lehis atef b'tzitzis, and talis gadol al mitzvah tzitzis. What's lehis atef? Yeah, so there's a certain type of way you're supposed to do it, right? There's different minhagim, a little bit, but the bottom line is that it means to actually wrap your head and probably your shoulders, most of your body maybe, in the talis when you put it on. That's why you see all these people doing these weird Arab things when they put their talisim on. You ever notice this? I'm like, wow, you're spending too much time in the Middle East. No, that's how you're actually supposed to put on your talis. That's called ituf. So it may mean here that when a katan is old enough to do that, what am I saying? As opposed to what? As opposed to wearing clothes. I mean, come on, babies wear clothes.
I thought it was
get dressed.
About, I didn't think it was talking about the telescope.
Well, they're all the same. It's all the same mitzvah.
It said wrapping at the same time. I thought, well, no, but at the same time, because no, but there's still even there is an age when the child's too young to. Right?
Well, that's the question. What age is this brisa describing?
Because
had it just said as soon as he's born, would have put tzitzis on him.
Because he doesn't recognize it at that point. So that's why I think it's referring to tzitzis and not talus.
Because what?
Because I'm saying he has to recognize that he's playing on tzitzis. So I think you have to be older. So the child has to be old enough that he recognizes he's playing on tzitzis. Not necessarily the talis, but
tzitzis. One of the things I think this Bryce is coming to do is it's trying to help us to come up with more of an objective shiur for when the child is chayev. Because really what you're saying is the real time a child is chayev is when he understands what the mitzvah is about or something like that. Well, how do you get to test him? Like, how do you do that? So the Bryce is saying there's an objective shiur for when we treat every child as chayev in particular mitzvos. It's basically when he can do the mitzvah, regardless of maybe how much he even knows about what he's doing. I mean, I'm not sure I know what I'm doing with a lulav. But I can shake it.
I think it's consistent, because if you said this for talis, I feel like talis would require that to
it's all the same or... thing. Talis God are the same mitzvah.
No, but the things you do for a talis are different than what you do for tzitzis.
That's an interesting question. If you should try to put on your tzitzis or you put on a talis. Okay. But the bottom line is it's all the same mitzvah. So a cotton from the time that he knows how to be what's called lehisatev, and that's a question. What does it mean, lehisatev? Does it mean, you know, technically to put it, wrap it like this way, or it just means to put it on?
No, so I'm saying it's for the tzitzis, or in the sense that the child can technically be younger. I don't think it's referring to, because if it was referring to wrapping a talis, it would be a lot older.
Mm-hmm. I think you're probably right. Okay, in any case, that's tzitzis. Lishmor tefillin. And when he's old enough to guard his tefillin, meaning he can behave properly, knows where to take it, where not to take it, no passing gas with it on and whatnot. Aviv lekeach loy tefillin. You notice that there's a slightly different lashon here, right? Lekeach lo tefillin is interesting. Why does it have to say it like that? Why doesn't it just say chayiv b'tefillin? Right? That's just what everything else is chayiv, right? So, I don't know, it could be just from a practical perspective that they're not the things that you could do yourself. Anybody can tie tzitzis, you know? But writing tefillin, that's a whole thing. Maybe it just means practically he's going to have to purchase them for him. The father has to actually get them, acquire them through the son. Okay, in any case, yodea l'daber, when he knows how to speak, aviv lomdo Torah u'kriya shema, his father teaches him Torah and Shema. Wait a minute, what does that mean? It means as soon as the kid starts saying, Abba, so you have to start teaching him Torah?
No.
Abba! Say, Shema, Abba, Shema, Shabba! That's not going to go so well. So what exactly is supposed to be happening over here? Torah, Maihi. Torah, what are you referring to? Amar Rav Hamnuna. It doesn't mean you start teaching him Torah. Come, Kindlechazet Bereshes Barash, I'm created. No, that's later. This means you teach him a pasuk. You teach him this pasuk. What do you mean? In other words, the way that a child should begin to speak should be with words of Torah. You're not teaching him anything. You're not teaching him Torah.
Right, so ideally it's saying that the child should be as young as possible, in a sense. That's why...
This is not... You notice the difference doesn't say when the child is able to speak, you teach him Torah. Right? It says when he begins to speak, you start... Yodea ledaber lomdo Torah. Is a chayav lil mode. That's what the North
Bengal. That
you encourage him to start speaking with words of Torah.
Right.
That's
right.
All.
Once he started talking himself.
I'm saying I think the idea here is not that you're starting his education in terms of learning Torah concepts. It's that when he starts to speak, his speech should develop with words of Torah. So what's Kriya Shema? As soon as he begins to speak, he started teaching him, you have to accept upon yourself the yoke of heaven, Kindala. This is a big machlekes in the Gemara. Is a father obligated in chinuch with his children of Shema? Shema is a deraisa, right? And has a limited amount of time. So do you have to make sure that your children are, saying Shema? So, you know, ideally, yeah, but like the father's not even home. He goes to work, like, you know? So that's the discussion in the Shulchan Aruch. The Gemara says, Kriya Shema, what do you mean by Kriya Shema? He pasuk rishon. Again, you're supposed to teach in the first pasuk that you know you should learn the first pasuk of Shema. In addition to just saying Teretz Yivul and Moshe Marash Gilas Yaakov, he should also teach and begin getting used to the first pasuk of Shema. Ayodei lishmor guvay oichlen al guvay taros. So this is a slightly different point that when he knows how to guard his body, in other words, this is talking about tumah v'tara now. And when a kid is old enough to be aware of what his body is doing, then you can eat on his body taharos. What do you mean on his body taharos? Rashi says, "Im naga gufoi betaharos in chayshishin lahem." So then, if his body touched things that are tahor, you don't have to assume that they are tameh. Avalol yadav. But the reason it says his body and not his hands is because we assume that the kid's body he was watching where it was, but his hands. You ever watch these kids? They're like running down the street, and their hands are touching everything. You know, the fence and the wall and the door handles. The kids are like, I don't know. Anyway, so when he knows how to basically watch his body, you can assume that his body is tahor, but his hands you cannot. Lishmor is yadav. Once he's a little bit older, and now he's watching his hands. He's conscious of where his hands are. Ochanal yadav tyrus, and you can even trust that his hands are tahor. You can eat tyrus despite the contact with his hands. Yeah.
Because he wouldn't know. And then when he's older, then we can start to trust his hands.
Yeah.
Right.
So you got to know the kid, you know, when you see that this kid is sort of like, you know, conscious of where his hands are and when he's done. Hedel Yisrael, Bershus HaYachid Sveiko Tamei, Bershus Rabin Sveiko Tahor. What's HaYedel Yisrael? Rashi says, 1, 2, 3, 4, 7 lines of the bottom. Shim Shoyalin Oisoi. When we ask him, No Gata Bituma, did you touch any Tuma? He can tell you, yes or no, or I'm not sure. In other words, until now, we've been discussing defaults. When can you just assume when it contacted the kid, when can you not assume? But when he's old enough that you can actually ask him and he'll give you a normal answer, well, then that becomes applicable. Now you have to ask him and get an actual answer, and all the regular rules apply. What rules? The rules of Tumah are not like rules in other areas of Torah. I think I've mentioned this to you before. That when it comes to sveikos, we always assume, oh, safek deraisa, lechumra, safek derabanan, lekula. That does not apply to Tumah v'Tahara. Tumah v'Tahara is a totally different game, totally different ballpark. Mirshus ha-yachid, if there's a safek in a Mirshus ha-yachid, then the safek is tameh. If the safek is Mirshus ha-rabim, sveiko tohor. I mean, learn it out from Sota and whatever else, but that's the rule. Hayadea lefres kapov, cholkim le-truma, we're talking about Kohanim. And if you have a Kohen that knows how to spread out his palms. Spread out his palms? What are we referring to? Birkas Kohanim, yeah. Birkas Kohanim, live long and prosper. We're talking about duchening. So if he knows how to duchen, so then you're allowed to cholkin, lechalek, literally means to divide. So here divide means to dish out, you know, to divvy out, to divide out. So you're allowed to divvy out to him truma from the granary. Apparently, before he's actually duchening, you're not allowed to do that.
It's in a sense, it's like he's become full kohen at that point, that he can receive truma from himself, right?
This seems to mean that even after a kohen is already a gadol, until people see him duchening, you're not allowed to give him truma straight. Wow. His father can at home, but you're not allowed to give it to him in the granary where you would distribute it to Kohanim.
So it's not even just referring to an age. I thought it was just saying... It's
an age of sorts, because a katan doesn't duchen. He doesn't duchen until he becomes a gadol. Nowadays, there's chinuch for duchening also. But I guess in those times...
But in general, at that time, there is actually an age limit, because... There is a definite age when a katan becomes a gadol. So it's not some subjective thing. It's just a matter of basically, I guess the. But then why is he even referring to it? We're talking about a katan here, right?
That's not so simple.
I thought it was saying that a katan could actually receive.
Take a look. 3 lines up from the bottom of the page in Rashi. Right. The last 3 words of the line. Bavesa goroinos ein cholkin lahem. Until they're known to be Kohanim, meaning they duchen, so everybody knows. So you're not allowed to give it out to them in the granary. Shebizayon trumahu is considered to be degrading to the truma. Shein kol ro'yav yoyde imboy shehu baki l'shaimra. Because everyone doesn't know that this kid knows what he's doing. He's able to guard it from becoming tame. Aval aveisan b'sharkin lehem, but you can send it to the house. Habakir mekin lehem, then you know that it's not obvious to the public. But you can't give it to him specifically in that location because it looks like you're not really being careful with the truma.
Right, but That's all. Isn't Rashi then saying that basically a kohen would actually be able to receive truma for himself if he knew how?
Well, so read the last line and see if you saw the question. When he knows how to duchen and he does it in the public, hakol yoydeim shevishte saros. Everyone knows he's a bar mitzvah. Shein cut on Paris Kapov, Kiramir Megillah, Hilka Holkinlo. That's why you're allowed to give it to him. So it sounds like you're not allowed to give Truma in a granary to a katan. You have to give it to a gadol. How are you going to know if he's a gadol? Show me your hairs. I didn't know. So once he duchens in public, that's the proof that he's a gadol. So it seems to mean that you're not allowed to give it to a katan. You have to give it to a gadol. It's not an issue of chinuch at all. It's just an issue of how to properly distribute your truma. That's what it says. Okay. Hayada, this one is for you shita guys. Hayada al-shchait. Once a kid knows how to shecht. A kid knows how to shecht. Oichlin mishchita, so you can eat from his shchita. Wow, isn't that fun? You bring your 8-year-old, you know, 9-year-old there, teach him how to shecht. That's only if there is an adult that's paying attention to what he's doing, standing above him, literally. So wait a second. So what does that mean exactly? So what does Rashi say? Rashi writes la'amein yadav l'shchita, that he can la'amein umnos trust, right? So the Amin Erot Shechita is able to properly utilize his hands for Shechita. That's how Rashi learns. That the kid doesn't really know all of the halachas of Shechita. He just, his hands are good enough to be able to do it. He knows the process of what you need to do, but he doesn't know all the halachas. So you can eat from his Shechita. Provided that someone else, that someone else is there that can make sure he followed the halacha properly. He didn't delay the shechita, meaning he didn't start the cut and then pause for a moment and then finish the cut. That invalidates the shechita. Or he put too much pressure. You have to cut with a knife. You ever do this? Trying to cut something? So instead of just letting the knife do its job, we put a lot of pressure on the knife. And the pressure is what does the cutting. It doesn't really have to be very sharp. It's just a lot of pressure. That also passes the shechita. So there has to be a gadol to make sure that he didn't do one of those two things. But if there was a gadol to make sure he didn't do one of those two things, the Gemara says that you can even eat from such a shechita. Yachal echal kezayis dagan. When he's able to eat a olive's worth of grains, marchikin mitzay asay mimeraglov, then you have to distance yourself from his excrement and his urine. Meaning, when it comes to davening, saying Hashem Hashem, learning Torah brachos, any of those kinds of things, until a child starts to eat grain, or apparently even when he eats a little bit, but it's less than a kezias, he's not capable of eating a kezias yet. So a little kid, his excrement is technically not considered to be excrement at that point, and you do not have to distance yourself from it. So if a person is going to make brachos, daven, say Shema, all those kinds of things, would be mutter, because that's not really considered excrement.
I thought for animal, but so then is that... Is that like a different status in animal? So for animal stuff, you do actually distance yourself, right? Or you cover it or something.
Yeah. I don't know if it has to do with the animals and what they can eat, what they can't eat, but yeah, all animals.
But I thought by a little kid too, you would actually cover it as well, no?
I mean, it's not like, you know, a nice thing to do, but on a technical level, it's not considered saya, it's not considered excrement.
Oh, is covering not considered the same thing as distancing yourself?
You have to both cover it, and if there's a smell, you have to distance yourself, Dalet Amos, from the smell.
Oh, okay, fine. So distancing is a separate thing in itself.
Yeah. Let's not discuss the buttery smell of the little children's excrement. Okay, in any case, you have to be 4 amos away from the excrement, and if it smells from the smell, once the child is able to eat a kezias of grain. I mean, it is a fact, by the way. There is a total change in the whole consistency, like, and everything once the kid starts to eat salads. It's a really big difference. Amar Rav Chisda, in case you needed my gushmanka. There's one more condition. We're not talking about a kid that can spend the entire day eating, you know, a little bit of flakes from the wheat, and eventually after a day, it'll be a kezias. No. It's a kezias, but kedei achilas pras. This is a shear of achila, that whenever, let's say when a person sits down to eat bread, he's going to eat a little piece by little piece by little piece. That doesn't count. You don't bench on that, you know? Kezias, kedei achilas pras means that you eat a kezias in the amount of time that it would take you to eat a half a loaf of bread. That's achilas pras, the amount of time it would take you to eat a half a loaf of bread. It's a shiur. It's a machlokas. What's the time, of course, you know, practically what that means. Is it 3 minutes? Is it 7 minutes? Is it 9 minutes? Whatever it is. But these are shiurim of achila. Let's say on Yom Kippur, so a person's not bekezayas, it's a gregarious. A person's not allowed to eat a gregarious of food. So, the whole day long? The answer is no, in kedei achilas pras. So when it comes to Yom Kippur, if a person does need to eat solid food, what we tell them is, eat less than a kezias or a gregarious in kedei achilas pras. In other words, take one of these little plastic shot glasses like they give you in Jewel. You fill it up with some bread or whatever you need to eat, and you eat that shot glass, not more, and then you wait 9 minutes. After that, you can eat another one. So you're not having that amount of food, the sheet were in kedei achilas pras. Amaru chia, it's still lesser. You're not allowed to do that. But for chola, so that's what we tell them to. Amaru chia, brady rav yeva. This is not the typical rav chia. The rav yeva is rav chia. Of a gadol, and if it's not a child, it's a gadol. Then when it comes to distancing yourself from his excrement or his urine, it has nothing to do with his capability to eat the kedei achilas pras. Sounds like, Rachmana Litzlan, you have a person that has a swallowing problem, you have a person that can't eat a kezias for this class, it doesn't make a difference. He is a gadol, and his excrement and urine is already considered to be excrement and urine. It's only once he becomes a gadol, there's no going back. Dechsiv, v'yesiv das, v'yesiv mach oiv. Hashlomach tells us that when a person, the more he knows, the more distressing things are, the more sad, the more pain he has. Meaning, there's no going back. Once you learn, Dagon may actually have been the Eitz Hadas, right? Eitz Hadas may have been wheat, according to some Shitos. That once a person becomes knowledgeable, so there's no such thing as backtracking on that. Yachal Echel Kezayis Sli. Once a child is old enough that he, not just grains, he's able to eat a kezayis of roasted meat, Shochten Alevis HaPesach, then you even include him in your Korban Pesach, you shech the Korban Pesach for him to be part of it. Shneimar Ish Lev Yachaloi. That it goes by every person who is able to eat it. Yehuda Omer, Ach Yochel Levarer Achila, until you're able to Levarer. I literally translate this Levarer.
To differentiate.
Yeah. So that's the next part of the Gemara. That what's Barer on Shabbos?
Separating,
right? There are two different things you can distinguish between the two. So here, Yehuda Omer Ad Shechol Varer Achila, until he's able to distinguish food. What do you mean? Because until now we said that you can include him in Korban Pesach once he's able to eat a kezias of roasted meat, which, you know, you don't have to be so old for that. Meat is hard to chew.
Would you want to include him in the Korban Pesach?
Why not?
I guess
food of Amunah. But if you're going to shecht it, when you shecht it, you have to know who's going to be included on it. So if he's going to eat it, you're going to have him in mind. So it's important. When he's able to distinguish food, what do you mean, distinguish food? What do you mean? Ketzad, how does that work? Noisin le tzror v'zorkoi, egois v'noitloi. He knows what's the difference between a rock that he throws away and a nut, and he takes it to keep it. You know, sometimes kids, really, they don't know the difference, right? Little kids will take anything and put it in their mouths if it's cool enough. So there's a certain age where a kid finally understands, no, this is food, this is not food. So when he becomes that age, according to Rabbi Yehuda, that's when he gets involved in Korban Pesach. Until then he's too young to be appointed, you know, on the Korban whatsoever. Hajan Allah Lulava Gazel, and we have finished praying Lulava Gazel. Nine, la 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 Until Chatzos.